welcome to part two of our women having it all in career and babyhood dialogue. Hi, welcome, Miriam. So this dialogue, we are going to be diving into the practicalities of working with the at odds of motherhood versus pursuing career. And so in our last one, we more set the tone of what is the dilemma and exploring some of what can actually be really complementary in being a mother and working, and what are some of the challenges. And where I'd like to begin today is by really acknowledging how this is no small feat, and it's actually really difficult. And there have been many times where I have had sleepless nights and cried and screamed. So I just wanted to begin with putting that in there and starting to look at, like, what are some of the real core challenges, and then how may we navigate those in healthier ways?
Yeah, what are some of the core challenges? If I think to my own experience, I think it's partly connected with one of the sort of the ways forward I found is, you know, that you sort of need to be on in these very different ways. So, you know, if you want to go for depth when you've got that half an hour and just straight away go and write that perfect piece or prepare the course you're going to do, you know, or vice versa, then let go of your work and just go for depth with your child. There's a real kind of flexibility or fluidity as a capacity to develop and to evolve in myself, where I'm fully in the moment with what is, and then also fully releasing it and moving into the next one. So that's really been both a challenge and then also a beautiful place for practice, for, you know, for really part of my spiritual practice is how can I be in full presence to whatever I'm engaged in the moment, which then includes the releasing part. It's not just the being present, but at the same time releasing so that I'm ready for the next moment and then the next, even if those moments back to back might be very different and might call for very different things in myself.
Yeah, and that feels like probably one of the hardest things we could ever do, to really start to embody that quality. And what came up as you were saying that is how at odds that feels with a lot of how we roll culturally and all of what we're holding, and especially in, you know, a time where there's so much stimulus and there's so much demand, there's a lot of attention switching, task switching. And so not only is it difficult when we're feeling torn between time with child, time on work, but even just in how we are at this place in time creates even more barriers to cultivating that level of presence and ability to let go of what's not right in the fore right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what's been helpful for you in cultivating that?
Well, you know, one of them was really getting honest with myself and realizing I'm actually really not good at multitasking. So, you know, that for me to simplify, and when I'm with my daughter, just to be with her rather than to once in a while, you know, run over and check an email and respond to one because I think it's so important that I do it then, or pick up the phone when it rings. So it was just realizing I'm not a good multitasker, and in a way just surrendering to that and now rejoicing in it, feeling the relief of I'm not good at it, and so, you know, when I'm going to do one thing, I'm just going to do that. And trust, sometimes it's so beautiful because I do feel then on its own without me doing much, there's some, rather than me feeling like I'm just spanning and it's a lot and I'm juggling too many balls and one of them might fall, which sometimes happens still, you know, as an experience of, wow, I feel really stretched. But in addition to that, also starting to notice where the two realms enrich each other. So where an experience that I'm having with my daughter, or the deep love that I'm experiencing, or the delight, or even just a reflection that pops up when I'm with her, how that can feed into my work as a coach and a counselor, and vice versa, you know, that insights that come from that other realm. So to start paying attention also to where there's bridging, so it's not just spanning where I feel like I'm stretched in two directions, but there's a beautiful bridging and a nourishing in both directions.
Great. you know, I'd like to build on that piece around multitasking, because I'm a great multitasker.
So in a way, that's a good thing, but yeah.
Yeah, in a way, it's a good thing, but it actually, what's interesting is that where the challenge is to really drop in.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I'll notice is, you know, I get a lot of stimulation from task switching. And in my work, I will have a lot of things on the go, and that is really energizing for me. And there's almost like on an energetic level, and with the way that my mind works, that'll keep me like juiced up, jacked up, and engaged.
Yeah.
And so where, for me, there's been a real challenge around, now I'm going to drop in and just be with my child. And where that edge of practice for me has been is not like, oh, okay, I really can leave all these things. What will happen in the moment is I don't want to. So I'll feel like an anxious pull to distract myself away from presence with my child. And one of the things that it was helpful, you know, like not having my phone around is helpful, or even going, okay, so for the next half an hour, I'm going to only follow my child's direction. And whatever he wants to play for however long he wants to play. And so I've taken that on as a practice for not allowing my own impulses to lead. And that helped me start to settle more.
Mm-hmm.
Because my way is not very settled.
Well, and you're just bringing forth the contrast, right? That sometimes what's required from us in the work arena versus the parenting is just very different. At least I think with coaching, which is your work, and being with your boy, presence is always good.
And that's the thing that's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is, again, with that bridging, what you were touching on is how we can actually allow these two worlds to really serve each other. Is that, and in my coaching, often the arena that a client is really wanting to do the work is not the area I'm having them practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where it's too hot. So for me, practicing with my son in this way, with deep presence, impacts not only my ability to meet my clients more deeply, but when I'm doing non-interactive work, which is kind of like the last thing I like doing,
mm-hmm.
Is I can take my seat more and stay with that which requires more focus, more settling in. And so that really serves is when I get to see the way that my way and my work is impacting my capacity to really be in full presence with my child. And so then I work to practice in a new way with him, that then I get to take that back, and that impacts my way of being in my work. And again, that speaks to that distilling down.
Yeah, and to start even maybe just paying attention to how they can complement each other versus being at odds with each other, which, I mean, this is something we haven't touched on completely yet. There's obviously the practical at odds of just time management, how much you can do in a day, even the practicalities. I think, you know, that we, most of us in the Western world at least, are raising our kids in fairly nuclear settings. And the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, I think is so true, and yet most of us don't have the village. And so maybe we could look at that a little bit of, well, yeah, how do you do it? Because I like to see it as a healthy challenge. Is like, okay, I happen to be one of those people who feel a deep calling to be a mother. If I think back on my life, I think it's the greatest gift I've ever experienced. And at the same time, you know, when I touch in with my deeper self, I do feel a call to express myself in ways that are not just in the mothering setting. And so, you know, how do I pull that off? And for me, one of the ways to look at it has been, rather than feel like I'm a victim of the juggling too much, or the span being too much of a stretch, or having to let go of something that's really key for my child or in my work, how can I step out of those constraints and sort of have a fresh look with fresh eyes, trusting that each of our lives, that we can create it like a piece of art, and that we don't need to just go with what's normal or assumed or expected. And if we can step away from all those sort of limiting assumptions and have a new look, what would it look like? And so, you know, that brings in again this piece of flexibility. I found in my case it really helped because I wasn't good at multitasking. Mixing things didn't work so well. So just to have some really clear times where I'm working and times when I'm with my daughter Adonia. And that's, I'm a late night owl. And I know you, Chill, I think are the opposite. So that
I can't get too early for me.
You know, we probably meet somewhere sort of in the early morning hours. You know, so what really helped me as a parent was, and this is something my husband and I implemented from the first day, was just working with rhythms. That if we had rhythms, and I say rhythms rather than schedules, because rhythms will change, you know, in relation to the developmental needs that our child had, but the bringing in rhythms so that we also, and she had some predictable sense of how the day was going to roll, and her bedtime was usually always around the same time, and it was then that I would work, you know. So when she was younger, she would go to bed at 7. When she was even younger, it would be even earlier. But then I, you know, that evening time up until midnight became my time to do other things. And then every time she would nap, I would do that. And some people might much prefer to clean the house in or just need to sleep. And I felt because it nourished me so much, it really worked well just to be with her when she was awake and or when she was with her dad. And then when she was sleeping, that would be my work time. And it just sort of seemed to simplify things a little bit, where I felt like I could keep my own flame alive, slowed down by a lot, especially in the early years. Now it seems to be quickening and expanding, but in the early years, also being okay with it slowing down and trusting that it's not going to get lost just because it's slowing down.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think, and that's a really important piece, too. You know, I felt my own, becoming a mother, my own fear of would myself be lost. And I would say to a certain extent, there is an inevitability to that with who I knew myself to be and living my life for myself. Even if we do have a wider calling to serve prior to becoming a parent, that really shifts. And one of the, you know, as we were talking about flexibility and expectations, I think certainly in the earlier years, those are really important. To be able to hold a longer view of time, that in those first couple of years, you know, just, just even the capacity to have a conversation with another human being
true.
In the first few months, like, never mind actually work, is a big thing. And, you know, my son's almost 5, and I'm very engaged with my work in a way that I couldn't be and wasn't when he was 2. And so, you know, one of the qualities I think that is very helpful is flexibility and patience and being able to be in those rhythms, looking at, okay, what's the most important thing? And then being willing to expand and shift. And, you know, when you talked about the nuclear families, I think that's a really important piece to touch on as well. Mm-hmm. And what I specifically want to speak to is, you know, I think a big dilemma is how do we create these villages? And one of the things that comes up for me is that culturally there's a bit of a, you know, especially in women's, the way the women's movement has moved, is there's this kind of culturally held belief of I should be able to do it all. And some super women complexes out there that can get pretty pathological, where if I ask for help, that means I'm failing. And I think that those can be a root cause of an inability to create a village. Mm-hmm. So we've got all of these families in their homes only relying on mother, father. And how do we expand our worldviews around what we could, should be able to do, but also what's best for our child? And I know that in your work, we've spoken about this before, is really looking at, you know, healthy attachment beyond the parent. So who are these other people in life that can be stable, solid characters for our children to be attached to, who can be supportive in ways to give up, whether, you know, give us some freedom, whether it's a half an hour, you know, or a full day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and like you say, holding the long-term view, and I think with children it's so helpful to think that, you know, of incremental lengthening of time. if possible, you know, so that when they're little, it is maybe just that half hour, and as they get older and they're ready. So, and you know, this is where I would take a fairly clear stand from my own experience and the work is, if you're gonna span work and motherhood, you as a mother comes first. That's really my personal take. And the reason I say this is because when you become a parent, it's not just about you. It's about this other human being who, at the beginning, is completely dependent and in a very vulnerable state. And because of the attachment needs that they have at that young age, which is really for physical proximity with those, you know, that they're close to, if we think of finding space and time in our day, that we can think of it with that long-term view and think of incrementally increasing the amount of time. And so patience, like you mentioned, is a huge one. And I think reaching out, it is in a way getting over ourselves in many ways.
Yeah.
And getting over the sense that we need to do it on our own, and also realizing that it can be so enriching for our children to be around other wonderful adults. You know, that can be a beautiful thing, rather than that means I'm not fulfilling everything I'm supposed to be doing. That could actually be a better occasion.
Yeah. Yeah, that while my child is with his grandmother is enriching. That's important. It's not this, this is just because I'm not available.
It's not a less than, right? It's different, yeah.
And so how, you know, from your perspective of the work that you're doing with parents, in that between you and your husband, you both are balancing the mutual care for your daughter, mm-hmm. and then between myself and my son's father and my son's grandmother is the care for him. And so, but for many, you know, there it is external child care situations. And so I noticed my tentativeness in touching into this because it can be such fiery topics. And I think this is where, you know, when you say mothering comes first, but then those who are called to work and they're not working from the home, mm-hmm. and so they're needing child care, you know, what, from a developmental perspective, what do you say about that in the incremental pieces, in age? What are your views on, you know, what's best for child and how to navigate child care that's not with a primary figure?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, really what you're touching on too with that question is what's possible and what's maybe ideal. And it's very delicate, right? Because I often say to people, you know, I'm homeschooling Adonia, she's 9 now, and Stefan, my husband, and I share the homeschooling. And in a way, it's a huge commitment because I never experience the spaciousness that other parents get when their kids start going to school. That just doesn't happen. And at the same time, it's a luxury. You know, it's really both, because I realize that it's not a given that it basically means one of us is not working at any time. Really, that's what it comes to, especially because both sides of the grandparents in our situation are very far away. So we don't have sort of immediate family that we can rely on. We have no aunts and uncles, no grandparents close by. So we're really it. We're sort of tagged as like, it's either you or you. And then once in a while we have friends that we can call upon, or people that have gotten close to Adonia that, you know, will do some childcare while I'm working at the office next door kind of thing. So, you know, there's both I basically just want to honor the fact that it is a luxury to be able to be that fully present with our children too. And that some people, for socioeconomic reasons or other reasons, can't do that. And so when you ask what developmentally, well, I would say ideally, if there's any way possible that the child in the first year can be with the primary parent figures, that would be ideal. And if I go even more ideal, I'd say for the first 3 years. Really, if we think of how attachment develops, that it first, you know, happens through the senses. So it's so important that the child is close through smell and sound and touch and being held to the people they're attached to. And when they become 3 years old, you know, they can usually bridge time more easily. So you'll notice for one child, it might be after 2 hours they're ready to go home or be with mama or papa. And for another child, it might be 3 or 4. It's almost like once that cup of needing connection with our primary parental figures has gotten a little empty, that's when it needs to get refilled. And if that's not possible, if, you know, they need to be in daycare for longer than any way to bridge it, you know, so that then when we drop our child off at a daycare, that we transfer the attachment that they have to us to the childcare person. And that can be as simple as just taking a moment for the three of you. So say I'm dropping off my daughter, that I would connect with the lady or the man who's taking care of her for that time, make eye contact, you know, have some time, transfer the attachment basically over for my daughter to this other person, someone that hopefully she's grown to trust and know. Maybe even give her something of myself, whether it's a hat or a scarf or something she can hold that can bridge the time. And then at the end of the time to transfer it back over and really then take some time, not to even do much, just to connect first. So to kind of just bridge the gap time that's happened. So those are just two things. Is one is the age, and then the other one is if it needs to happen, then to really make sure that our child can transfer their attachment needs over to someone who is attentive to them and can be present with them and hopefully can hold similar values as far as caregiving as we do.
Great. Beautiful. So before we wrap up, I'd like to just kind of do a synopsis of what are the qualities that we look to embody, or that one may look to embody, that would have the navigation or the bridging of these two worlds be done in a healthy and fulfilling way.
Yeah, I love that. So maybe I can mention the ones that come to my mind, and then you can mention the ones that I've left out that come to your mind. So I think one we touched on quite a bit was flexibility. Just to you know, the quality of becoming more fluid. And then there was the quality of depth or the level of presence that we can bring to each moment. One thing I heard a lot in our conversation in now both parts of our dialogue was that sometimes the solution has a lot to do just with reframing what we value and how we value it, and looking for places where there can be a win-win situation, where we can look at how what we're spanning can, in a mutual way, support and nourish in both directions. And then I think the long-term view was one that came up a few times also, where when we become mothers, we're dealing with real little human beings who, especially in the early years, need us close. And so if we can have some patience, that maybe some things that we would love to do in the world, maybe put on hold or slow down for a while, and trusting that the time does come back, and that our gifts don't disappear, and that if anything, I find that they get enriched by the experience of being a mother. And one we didn't touch on, but maybe I'll just mention quickly, that has been really helpful for me, was when I let go of certain sort of streams in my life that were very dear to me. So one being dance and the other being singing, sort of in a more public way. It was so helpful for me to move beyond it having to be me doing it, and instead starting to view and sort of the bigger scope of looking at some close friends that I had who were really then pursuing the path of dancing or of singing, and feeling how I could partake in and celebrate with simply the fact that it's happening on this planet and it doesn't just have to happen through me. So there was sort of a stepping into a kind of like a transpersonal recognition of passions or callings in me that simply, you know, could be held by more than myself, and that could also be a really beautiful, enriching thing and could let me relax and breathe out and not feel like I've got to do it myself.
Wow. Very cool. You know, that to me feels like it's like the next place that we can go as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that also ties into the way that we can support each other, not only by supporting what we're doing, but being supportive in what others are unable to do, mm-hmm. by giving ourselves fully to what it is we are choosing to do.
Yeah. So to see us more as a whole also, like while we're distinct, unique individuals, but also look at how we're all undeniably interconnected and how we can, you know, witness that more and live into it more fully.
Great.
How
Right?
about
So
you? Were there some qualities that, you know, you wanted to?
Yeah, you know, I think to piggyback on the reframing piece, I think that there a quality of like interior flexibility, as opposed to flexibility with time and flow and structure, but interior flexibility and interior acceptance, an ability to really take a critical eye to what we value and why.
Yeah.
I think that that's a really, you know, there's a lot of shoulds in our interior structures and stuff that we are trying to live up to, and being able to recognize those. And, you know, and inside of that, trust, too. So interior flexibility and then trust in ourselves. So being able to look at, well, what is right for my family? You know, what is right for each child? Each child's going to have different needs.
So true.
Each parent's going to have different needs. And in each season, there are different needs for what I'm able to output. You know, when there's real creative inspiration. Okay, so in my work, when it becomes more full, what needs to be let go of, and where do I need to gather more support? So it's like interior flexibility to be willing to look at what's really there, as opposed to who I think I should be, what I think I should do, which seems to drive a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, Chila, I love that. It because you're really pointing to a simplicity beyond complexity there. And I feel like so much can come together with what you just mentioned, because when we get down to the essence of it, you know, when we really come back to the piece we talked about at the beginning in the first part of being in touch with our true self and what's the calling there. If we even go, you know, a few steps deeper, why are we here on this planet, you know, and my view would be is we're here to awaken, to become more conscious and to really serve the whole. And to, if we sort of find how we, you know, in each in our own ways, what would we distill it to when we really get to the bottom of why we're here, then we can suddenly see that that can happen in so many different ways, and it can happen through mothering, and it can happen through any kind of work. It can happen through, you know, working at a gas station. It can happen really anywhere. And it's more about what we bring to it. And then, you know, obviously finding forms where it feels like the meaning fits, like there's an alignment with why we do it. But I think bringing presence and the sense of spiritual awakening and growing up, that can happen in so many different ways. When I feel like I can't do so much in the realm of my work, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen as a parent and vice versa.
I really love that. And I think where I'd like to inquire a little bit more is, you know, for those, it's great to say, okay, when I can distill down and really be really in touch with self and with where I'm called. For those who don't have access to that, you know, where, and this is part of where I was touching on, you know, that interior flexibility and trusting oneself, which I think is also a big theme. So trusting that however I'm bridging these, you know, what's the right way for me, what's the right way for my family, and really being able to trust my own self-authorship. For those who don't have access to that, or, you know, for you and I think that there is, we have a bit of the luxury of being really tuned into what our calling is and the ways in which we want to express that. And so for those who do feel called, but there's more muddled with cultural expectation or, you know, their own kind of interior guessing of what that looks like, what do you see is a way in to become more tuned into what that is?
Well, one is, you know, to go see you. And the other thing that came up as you were asking questions was just silence, to get quiet. You know, if there's any different, people will find different ways to get quiet, but to get quiet and then see what bubbles up unto itself. Any ways we can to have the mind chatter, and like you say, those expectations and the shoulds and the shouldn'ts and all that, if they can quieten down, whether that's after a run through the forest or sitting quietly and just letting the emotions move through until we're emptied, or listening to a beautiful piece of music or whatever it is, or lying down under the stars at night, or you know, any way that we can come to some stillness. And then a question that's helped me, because I mean, one of the things that I've experienced all through my life is that I wish I had 10 simultaneous lives, because there's so many things I love to do and I'm curious about and interested in. And it's really helped me to think, okay, at the end of the day, you know, what would I most regret not having done? What would I most feel like that would really have been more of a soul level should, rather than just a mind or an ego desire should, or a social expectation should, you know, like,
that is an important question.
That really helped me, you know, when I was like, yeah, okay, so, you know, I'm passing on from this existence. What are the few, and they usually end up being a handful, you know, they're not that many, where I feel like they're really connected with a gift that I carry in the world. There's something that, you know, no one else will do the way I do, and that there's partly almost an obligation in me to do it because of who I happen to be.
Beautiful. I love that. I'm stealing that one. There's my new question. Yeah, I mean, that's a big dilemma. On the one hand, there's the, you know, the obligations that get juggled,
yeah,
in carrying all this. But I find, you know, my biggest challenge in saying no to things is because I want to say yes to someone.
Yes, I hear you.
Because I'm hungry for something. I want to engage. And, yeah, I really appreciate the depth of that inquiry.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, I mean, we could go on and on, Sheila, we're probably going to have to wrap on, but the other piece is really that I think we get satisfied by quality, and this is really helped me, that would love to have, you know, at least 10 simultaneous lives, is if I just give myself to a few things, but I go for more quality, and that could be as simple as sitting down and really being present with my daughter. That it not doesn't just nourish her cup of needing presence, which is such an intrinsic human need, but it also fills my cup.
Yeah.
Or a counseling session, you know, when I'm really present to the other. Those are the sessions I never feel depleted, because I feel like I'm more fully in service. There's a whole part of me that just gets out of the way, and at the same time, I'm being fully nourished.
Beautiful. You know, I think that's a really, really important piece, is what is the work that we're doing, and is it nourishing us?
Yeah, yeah,
because
totally.
I find that, too, when working with a client, that at the end of the session, I'm more energized.
Exactly.
And so if we can be in our work in a way that at the end of the day, where there's been a lot of output, that inside of how we're working, we're being filled up, then what we can bring to our child is more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And also allowing the quality of presence with our child to then fill us up even more, so we can bring that back to our work.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a beautiful way to see how we can span it, you know, in the ideal. I mean, I think that's really what we can aspire to, is to see it as a practice, so to be patient with ourselves. But I love the way you just articulated that. That's something I so aspire to and see really then in essence as my spiritual practice.
Mm. Great. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for this conversation. And I'm really excited to see just what bubbles up in my own being after sitting with what you've offered here.
It's been a total pleasure. This whole series on parenting, I've been really enjoying every post that's gone up, and just feel blessed to be part of the circle that's gathering around this theme. So thanks for bringing me along.
Oh, my pleasure, my honor. Thank you so much for being here.